Nutty Bites, because nerd girls are hot.
Hello, Mixed Nutcases. It's Nuke Joss, and I have got a special, well, a few special guests and a nutty debate for you today. Today with me, I have guests T. Morris and Philippa Ballantyne, the writing team behind the Ministry of Peculiar Occurrences novels. They are about to come out with their third novel in that series, as well as authors of several, several other novels. T. Pip, say hello.
Hi there. Hello. Hey there.
You guys can go through your resume in a bit. With me also, I have Heath and Angela from the Red Dwarf podcast. And Angela is also of the Through the Pages of Sherlock Holmes podcast. Say hello, Heath and Angela.
Hello.
Hi.
And of course, with me, my regular co-host or antagonist, Tech.
Hi, I'm Tech, and this is Mr. Hoppity.
And for those of you listening to the audio-only version, you have no idea what he's talking about.
Just picture Tech sitting in the back like a supervillain, but instead of a large white cat, he has a rather dangerous-looking bunny rabbit with sharp, pointy teeth.
Just an ordinary bunny, isn't it?
Tech, right. I am glad to hear that you're regular, though. Congrats on that.
Oh, thank you. It's been a lot harder.
More fiber in his diet.
He takes podcasting Metamucil. It works. So today we're going to debate our favorite fictional couples. But before we do that, we're going to let T and Pip pimp the ever-loving crud out of their book, which is not in stores yet, but in the top 50 on Amazon already?
Yeah, it's pretty amazing. The book hasn't even come out yet, and already we're in the top 50. So it must be really good because it's ranked.
Well, we think it is.
Yeah, we think it is. The book is the third in the Ministry of Peculiar Occurrences series, the first published by Ace Rock Books, and it is called Dawn's Early Light. You can read up, you can actually get caught up on all things Ministry of Peculiar Occurrences at ministryofpeculiaroccurrences.com. The Ministry of Peculiar Occurrences, Pip, why don't you tell people what that is?
Oh, well, it's steampunk, adventure, fun, romp, fantasy, with a little dash of romance. Ministry of Peculiar Occurrences is a bit like the Steampunk X-Files or Warehouse 13, but actual steampunk with more gears.
Yeah, we got the budget that Warehouse 13 did not.
Yeah, and our imaginations fully funded.
Right. So the entire series focuses around two agents that one of them actually got demoted to junior archivist after a liberal appliance of dynamite. And she is Eliza D. Braun.
From New Zealand.
And she is working alongside Wellington Thornhill Books Esquire, the chief archivist and the only archivist at the Ministry of Peculiar Occurrences.
I never noticed that before.
Yeah,
yes.
You never noticed that, did you?
He never has any minions.
So, but what happens at the end, spoiler alert for those of you who haven't read or listened to the book or the audio book of both Phoenix Rising and The Janus Affair.
Plug your ears now.
Yes. For those of you who haven't reached the end, Wellington and Eliza make it out okay, and then they get sent on their first actual mission, their first sanctioned mission, and they're sent to the United States.
Hence the Dawn's Early Light.
Hence Dawn's Early Light, to investigate mysterious disappearances off the coast of North Carolina known as the Outer Banks.
If you look at the cover, it's got some spoilerific stuff on it.
We got some spoilerific stuff on the cover. We're very happy with the cover.
Explosions,
airships, death rays. We're very happy with the way Dawn's Early Light. We literally take you from sea to shining sea, and it's really a lot of fun. Now, if you are hesitant, if you want to know more about the ministry itself, if you want to hear about some of the adventures in the ministry, but you're not ready to take a dive in the books yet, we have a podcast, audio podcast, Parsec winning podcast.
Yes.
Thank you very much.
Don't forget that.
Yeah. It's Tales from the Archives. Volumes 1 and 2 are available right now on our website. We're going to be bringing Volume 2 very soon to
3.
We'll be bringing Volume 2 very soon to patiobooks.com.
Oh, okay. But 3 is coming out.
3 is coming out this month. And the first story in that installment, if you don't count our normal Christmas special, the first installment of Volume 3 is called Silver Linings, and this is a short story that not only we have co-written, but Ace Books will also be helping distribute as a free giveaway.
Then we got Ministry Protocol.
And well, there's also Ministry Protocol. Ministry Protocol is standalone short stories that tell you all about what they do with the Ministry of Peculiar Currencies.
Different agents and stuff.
We have Liana Renee Heber. We have Delilah S. Dawson.
Alex White.
Alex White of the Gearheart at gearheart.com.
Jared Axelrod.
We also have Jared Axelrod. We have J.R. Blackwell. We have
J.R. Tolkien.
No, we have...
Oh, damn, we didn't have him.
We do not have J.R. Tolkien. But we do, but we also have Glenn Frund, who makes his writing debut with us. And while you may not recognize the name, he is also known as Coyote in the League of Steam. So we had one of the League of Steam guys writing for us. This is a terrific cavalcade of extremely talented authors, and we're very proud of it. It was our Kickstarter last year.
Oh, and we've got a role-playing game coming out.
And we got a role-playing game. You were just like, hey, a role-playing game! Let's get it!
I know. The Ministry's gone.
Bread, milk, toilet paper!
Well, we're up to 36 short stories now, so there's a lot of stuff going on.
I realized that I was very bad in planning my props because the anthology is actually downstairs as a little display. But you know what's great about interviewing T is that you don't have to prod him. You don't have to draw any of the information out. He just rolls. But yeah, no, awesome stuff. And the role-playing game is based on the Fate system, which is a fantastic role-playing system, by the way. It is purely based on character concept and playing to your characters, the backstory of your character. So like, if for instance, your character is afraid of the dark and you're about to go into a dark room, your DM may say, your character is afraid of the dark. You can get a fate token if you don't go in this room. Or, for instance, at a time that you might not flee, being able to break bonds or whatever, you say, well, you know what? I should be able to break my ties and run out of here because it's dark and my character is afraid of the dark. Fantastic. Love playing that system.
Well, the way it works out, the role-playing game, which is called Ministry Initiative. The Ministry Initiative is apparently going to be coming out around the same time as Dawn's Early Light. It's going to be a heck of a rollout right there. Yeah, I know. And maybe to celebrate, depending on finances and how things are looking, we may actually put the steampunk fate dice that we offered in the Kickstarter as something you can pick up from us over at Imagine That Studios. So we'll see how that goes.
Yeah, we can't wait to use the dice.
Yeah.
Yeah, the dice are awesome. I've got a set of antique-ish looking fate dice myself. They're quite fun. The funny thing was, Tech and I were involved in a role-playing game. It was a game that a friend of ours put together, and he took this idea of a steampunk setting from one rule system and then took some of the rules but threw away the dice and moved it to the Fate system. So when I heard Ministry Initiative was going to be Fate system, I was super excited.
Sweet.
We've seen some of the pictures and stuff that that they've done. It's like
beautiful artwork. PJ Schneider, who is our game author, she's doing a great job with it. It's in the capable hands of J.R. Blackwell. So we know we're being taken extremely good care of, and we wanted the game to be ready by Christmas, but when they said, well, it's looking like March, we're like, wow, we're going to have the third book out at the same time as the game.
That's what you call
it. It's going to be a all-nighter party weekend. It's going to be awesome. Awesome.
Except we're doing something that weekend.
I know.
We're going to be teaching that weekend.
The Ministry.
We're going to be teaching Fatecore, baby. That's what we're going to be doing. Anyway.
Teaching what?
We're teaching in Richmond. We're doing a masterclass and
awesome.
We're doing a masterclass of for social media for authors, which we're discovering day by day. That's a full-time job right there.
Just take that show on the road.
Yeah, we are. I think we are.
So Ministry of Peculiar Currencies, which I still use the hashtag MOPO. I'm not sure if you guys have moved on
anything
else.
No, we use MOPO.
Excellent. Which Tech often laughs at me when I say, because I will refer to the books as MOPO around the house. And he just
MOPO.
Exactly. It's really fun because these books, they're really quick reads. They've got really interesting characters. And like you said, it's like steampunk X-Files. I mean, heck, the female protagonist is even a redhead. although what you said about books being the chief archivist, but the only archivist, it makes him a little, since we've got Heath and Angela here, there's a little bit of Rimmer in him, isn't there?
There is. Yes, there is.
Except
there
is. He's confident.
Well, yes, yes, he's confident. So, yes, he's Rimmer when Rimmer was going for the test to qualify for the hologram ship, and they loaded up that other intellect into Rimmer. And, you know, so I would say Wellington is closer to that version of Rimmer.
He's not quite Ace. But
he's not Ace Rimmer. No. Yeah. No one is Ace Rimmer other than Ace Rimmer. Smoke me a kipper. I'll be back for breakfast. I mean, come on. We're talking.
There was also Ace Rimmer, Ace Rimmer, Ace Rimmer, Ace Rimmer, and Ace Rimmer, and Ace Rimmer that were Ace Rimmer, and a few thousand more.
Ah, I might have missed that episode.
That is what is it? It's.
Yes, Stoke me a clipper.
That's it. Stoke me a clipper. That's it. Yeah. So and then Eliza is fantastic because she's so full of spirit, she's so full of spunk, and in the very first book, in her explanation for the reason that she is demoted, her answer is, "But I like explosives."
I like black powder and dynamite.
Yeah, that's it. I might like black powder and dynamite, and
That on a mug at our
Zazzle store. It's
got an Eliza mug. We have an Eliza mug.
So that would be not unlike another Ace from Doctor Who.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, Ace.
She's a little older than that. A little older than that, but yeah.
Wow. Oh, that takes me back. Yeah.
What was it you were going to say, Tech?
Oh, the black powder and dynamite D's are a few of my favorites. I'm going to re-record that.
Exactly. So the book is coming out in March, and people can pre-order from Amazon. They can pre-order from bookstores. Is there any direct link, any direct site you want to send people to?
MinistryofPeculiarOccurrences.com. You can follow the links there, all to Amazon, to Barnes & Noble. You can pre-order, and yes, pre-ordering does matter.
It does. We got the word.
Yeah, just as a quick side note, there's a lot of speculation about does pre-ordering matter, and it's one of the beautiful things about social networking on a whole. Our agent actually stepped in the middle of this discussion that Pip started and said, "Look, I'm their agent. I'm the one that has to deal with their sales and their numbers." And the answer is yes.
Buy it.
Yes.
Buy it now.
Buy it. Because the nice thing about pre-sales is that the more you sell in the pre-sale, the more that the bookstores will notice that and go, "Huh, maybe I should stock up." And then they start getting more books in there. And that's another thing for any time you have books that wind up randomly in bookstores. Pip and I constantly do drive-bys where we will be, if we're in town and we see a Barnes & Noble or any bookstore, we will pull in and we will say, "Well, let's see if we're there." And if we're there, we sign the books. Pip, just recently, we were in New Zealand.
Oh, yeah, we did.
We had a drive-by, but it was for the last book we would expect to find in New Zealand. We found...
Was it Hunter and Fox?
It was Hunter and Fox, yeah. And they're with Pyre, which is a smaller outfit, but it was just so neat because that was the only book they had. And we were like, wow, the chances, the chances. She signed it.
That's awesome. Mm-hmm. Could you imagine just walking into a bookstore, finding a book, and then opening it up, and the author signed it?
That'd be awesome. I have had that experience. In a Walmart $5 bargain bin, I picked up Peter and the Star Catchers, and it was signed by Dave Barry.
Ah, nice.
And, the other author, whose name escapes me at the moment, Rick Riordan. It was a dual author. No, not Rick Riordan.
It's on my shelf over here, anyway.
The or it's in the pile or something.
Their MP3 player is saying, "It's this guy! It's this guy!"
So I have a question.
Go ahead, Tech.
So book four, we're going to Venice, right?
Actually, we're going to Europe. We might.
Venice might escape.
Venice might escape this go round. This go round.
Yeah.
But
well, you know, we want more books. So.
Well, you're gonna. I think Tech, you're gonna enjoy book four because books one through three have been a lot of fun. I mean, book two got a little sinister. Book one had a few dark moments. Book three is just way.
It's a cross country.
It's a cross country romp. It reminds me of a steampunk. It's a mad, 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 mad world.
What do we call it? We called it.
I think we just called it From Sea to Shining.
No. We called it airship.
Instead of planes, trains, and automobiles, it's airships, hypersteams, and motor cars. And
I
and that's that's book three. Book four, when we were getting into it, we're like, this is starting to sound like the Bourne Identity. And we went way dark in this one. Way dark.
And there are lots of revelations.
Lots of revelations. Lots of secrets are revealed in the fourth. In the third book, some secrets
some
are revealed.
Some secrets, but in love.
Fourth one? Yeah. Yeah. We open a can. It's on.
Plague doctors open cans, just saying.
With their sticks?
Yes, and plague doctors.
For their noses.
And for beers.
So, Tech, they were talking about how they go into bookstores and sign the books. Do you want to tell the Mixed Nutcases what we do when we go to bookstores?
Oh, we pimp like crazy.
We are real marketers, which I'm sure make bookstore owners really and staff really annoyed, but what do?
So you find the shelf, you find the author that you like, you grab their book out of the shelf, and then you turn it to block all of the other ones that you don't like, and you put it right. And then you find the shelf of Tea and Pip books, and you go, Tea and Pip, Tea and Pip.
Tea and Pip. I used to work in a bookstore. You'd annoy me.
Yes. Yep.
I worked in a bookstore.
But now as a...
I second.
Now as a writer, I'm like, that's awesome.
Yeah. I will say, after doing that for a couple of months at our local Kohl's, I did see a Sigler book in the staff picks. I think it's effective. Like, I mean, somebody's like, okay, these people keep doing this.
It's gonna mean
something.
I might
as well read it.
I grab Scott Sigler's books and move them over to the children's section.
That's just mean.
That's not cool. Mean. I do.
Or,
you
you grab Ancestor and you put it in cooking. There you go. Now we're good.
There you go. All right. So the next time you do something like that, please take a photo of it. Take a photo of it. Instagram that.
Dreck.
I wanna see. I just want to be able to see, the late great Ian M. Banks blocked, cock blocked by our books. There's just something very cool about that.
What was it? I remember there was one time where I was like, I got to turn it out, but I can't cover. And who was it that I didn't want to cover?
Gail Carrier?
That's probably it. I was like, I can't cover Gail, but I can't cover this. And it was like, for some reason, they were together. It was really funny.
Now, all right, I'm just saying.
Before we go into the debate, could you please list the different books that you have? Because here's the thing. Not only do you guys have a bunch of books, but...
Do we have time for the whole list?
We'll see.
Not for the whole list.
Actually, her digest version.
Her list is bigger than my current list, so that's okay.
Yeah,
so.
And just assume anything Pip says is a series. But Pip has done something that a lot of authors aren't able to do. She is published by different publishers, and they don't, and it's not stopping her from getting published. And then Mopo went from one publisher to another in the middle of a series, which is kind of unheard of. I mean, it doesn't happen all that
it's
often.
It's unusual.
It's unusual. Yeah. But now I will say this. What is unusual is that Mopo has actually been published to date by four different publishers, and if a Kickstarter comes through... No,
yeah, it is coming through.
Five different
and
publishers.
And if the other Kickstarter comes through, six.
Six. But,
so we're going for some sort of record.
So in order, Mopo has been published by Harper Voyager, Bane Books, Ace Books... Imagine That Studios, Ace Books, and then the two
The people that did SteamWorld. I can't remember the name of the press off the top of my head, but and then there's the New Zealand one, Steam Press.
So six different publishers, same property. We're pretty proud of those stats. And if you're wondering where did the Bane Books one come from, I got this random email last year from one of the editors over at Bane saying, I'm putting together a Christmas anthology, and I happened to come across as a download In the Spirit of Christmas. Now, this is the short story where Wellington and Eliza take a late-night case that involves Ebenezer Scrooge. And that actually made it into A Cosmic Christmas to You. So it was the follow-up to A Cosmic Christmas. And I was very, very proud to be in that because I always said it would be a cold day in hell before I become a Bane author. And now I'm a Bane author. So I've got
is it chilly up there?
It's chilly. It's chilly, yeah. But yeah, so we're very excited that Ace is on board with us for it. And that's why we want the third book to do gangbusters.
We want to reward them for loving us so much.
We want to reward them for the risk that they're taking and in picking up a book midstream. And we're very happy to be on board with them, and they've been great with us so far. So win-win all around.
Yeah.
Awesome. All right. So, Pip, the books that you have out there that people can buy.
Okay. Well, with Imagine That Studios, I've got Chasing the Bard and Digital Magic.
Yep.
T's two Billy books are also available. Where the Child is coming out next month, which is my New Zealand historical fantasy. With Ace Books, the Books of the Order, Geist, Spectre, Wraith, and Harbinger are all out. And with Pyre Books, Hunter and Fox, and Kindred and Wings are all out. Have I forgotten anything?
And then we have Assorted Short Stories with Imagine That Studios. We have the Tales from the Archives that we sell as 99 Penny Dreadfuls, as well as collections.
We've done some novellas and stuff.
We've done some novellas as well.
You did a steampunk Aladdin. That was fun.
I did that. And you, in turn, did steampunk Little Mermaid.
Yes.
And I believe that covers
so majority.
Far. Yeah.
And is that everything that's out there for you, T?
Yes. The only other thing that didn't get mentioned was Moravi. And Moravi is only available right now as a podcast. You can get that at podiobooks.com. And Moravi, I think I will never take Moravi offline because that was the first podcast novel. And I'm very proud of that. Very proud to have been podcasting alongside both Scott Sigler and Martin Jeffrey at one point. And then at one time, it was me, Scott, and Hutch, J.C. Hutchins, who just recently started getting back into writing fiction. I mean, we also have some assortment of nonfiction that's out there. But really, you can find all of what we've done at either tmorris.com, which is TEEmorris.com, and also at pjballantine.com.
Alrighty then. That is awesome. And
we didn't take up too long.
A little longer in this segment than we do with others. But that's
You wanted us to go there. You wanted us to go there. So
You brought this upon yourself.
I did bring this upon myself. T and Pip are, full disclaimer, quite good friends of mine that I met through the podcasting world. T is responsible for me going to Balticon, which is the reason this podcast exists. So there you go.
Friends of yours are like arch villains of me.
This this great story with that involves Nutty. I thought I want to share it here. It was at New York Comic Con, and we had been through hell and back trying to get to New York Comic Con.
No instructions on where to go.
No instructions on where to go. We were running around. We had a
signing.
Our train was delayed, so we were trying to make it to our signing. So we're sprinting through New York Comic Con. We happened to grab somebody who wore a staff shirt, and we got lucky. We said, "Do you know where the author
is?" Help us!
And he looked at me and he said, "I know where to take you." And then we descended through several hells of ADD. That's all I could talk about because I didn't know where to look. I didn't know what to listen to. It was terrifying.
Everything.
Then we come around a corner and there's a line of people. There's a line of people. And I happened to see Nutty.
Around the booth.
Oh, it was around the booth.
And we were like, oh, cool.
And I was like, oh, cool.
The other people must still be
here. Someone else is here and we're okay. We're going to have time to set up. And I said it loud enough for Nutty to hear me. And she just got this big grin on her face and she just went,
no shaking her
and
head.
I went, are you kidding me? Ugh. And these people turned around and actually there were some people in front of Nutty that were like, it's them. And they were like, what?
Who?
And we were like, you're all here to see us? And they all went, yeah. And I'm like, crap, we're late. And we just
run to the front of the
queue. And it was just a machine. Just boom, boom,
it
boom,
was
boom.
Fun.
Fun, but man, that was a night.
That was awesome for me because I was like, all right, you guys are in the right place. Go on over there. They're all waiting for you. And the woman behind me was just like, wait, that was them. That was T and Pip.
Seriously.
Oh my God. Oh my God. This is so exciting. Do you know them?
And you're like, hey, I've had beers with him. It's okay. Alex White's dropping her name now. He was in a doctor's office and he saw someone reading Phoenix Rising. And he goes up to him and goes, you enjoying that book? Yeah, I'm friends with the authors. I'm like, go, brother, go.
You know? I do that all the time. I love how when I'm talking to people about steampunk and they say, oh, you know what's a really good steampunk book? Ministry of Peculiar Occurrences. And I look up and like, yeah, I know. I've got copies signed by the authors because they're my friends.
We roll together, yo. We roll together. We popped a few caps at that time. Yeah.
Exactly.
Popped a few caps. That's all you can do with a steampunk gun.
A root beer. So
No, wait. Tech and I have enjoyed a few brewskis with you in
beers,
our day.
Actual beers, yes.
A few real beers in our day.
Yeah.
Oh, but before I forget, for those people who are tuning in on this podcast, and,
we apologize.
Yeah, that, and also the new media, whatever you want to call it, social media or new media barbecue. It is happening at the Residence Inn Marriott.
Not the Hunt Valley.
Not the Hunt Valley, but the Residence Inn. Yeah. We'll be hosting it. We're gonna fire up the grill. We're gonna do it again. Okay.
And you guys missed last year's.
Yes.
Yeah, we heard about the.
We were in Detroit.
Yeah. But,
the eventual successful one.
Okay, good.
We had a huge burger off, and it was a fantastic time. So
sweet.
Mr. Morris, you may have to step up your grilling game because I believe Mr. Banks has thrown the gauntlet.
Oh, really?
Well, he is a cookie. Yes.
Really? Mm. Man will make meat, and people will be happy. Banks can go sit one.
Oh, it's
me
on.
Don't understand either.
We should bring our secret weapon.
Yep, PETA.
No, I was thinking about Cookie, the guy that cooked for us at the Smoky Writers Mountain Retreat.
Oh, my God.
It'll be on.
Yeah, if you want to hear... Okay,
I'll dress him up so he looks like you.
Oh, that'll work. If you want to hear about the orgasmic experiences that we had that involved food, go to thesharedesk.com. That's the one thing we didn't mention.
Oh yes, we do that.
We have our shared desk podcast where we talk about writing as a couple, and we talk about stuff. We talk about writing stuff. We talk about geek stuff. But
eating
it's
stuff,
but
drinking
the
stuff.
One of the last episodes of the shared desk involved the Smoky Writers Retreat, which was in the Smoky.
Organized by Alex White.
By Alex White. And we talk about Cookie and his incredible food. So it's just crazy stuff. So crazy stuff. Yeah.
So to all of my listeners, by the way, if you're not planning on going to BaltCon, you need to be. And that includes Ethan and Angela, who are like, we can only do DragonCon.
No.
I will have you know, we are going to another con this very weekend.
Woo.
Just happens to be in one of the DragonCon host hotels. I did want to say, because I will feel horrible if I shortchange an author, Ridley Pearson is the other co-author of Peter and the Starcatchers, not Rick Riordan.
There you go. Very different.
You found that at Walmart. That's impressive.
Wow. I mean, that's amazing.
That is cool.
That is amazing.
I will say, by the way, we got our copy of Pandemic last week, and Tech has been spoiled. Tekken has been very spoiled because it comes in the mail and he looks at it and he flips it open and goes, what, no signature?
Good Lord, is there no end to these lost cases?
We did make a dent.
A dent? Welly, it's more like we're trying to lower the Thames a teaspoon at a time.
But consider what we have learned in the process and what new mysteries await us. Here's the case of a mythical creature of Siam coming to the aid of the ministry. Here's another set in your native country of New Zealand that tells of an ancient holy man waking a dragon. And here is an intriguing case of a strange series of heists corresponding with a traveling festival.
Well, since you put it that way, let us proceed. Testing, testing.
Miss Braun, exactly what are you intending to do with that micro? Oh, no.
Oh, yes.
We have talked about this.
And now we're going to podcast it.
Again?
Again.
Tales in the Archives, Volume 2.
The second season of the award-nominated podcast from Pip Ballantyne and T. Morris.
Subscribe for free through iTunes or at the Ministry of Peculiar Currents' website.
Or visit the Kindle store at Amazon.com, the Nook store at BarnesandNoble.com, or Smashwords.com for 99-cent editions of these original shorts.
Find out more at MinistryofPeculiarOccurrences.com.
Okay, so we're going to start the debate portion of this.
Yay!
And what we're going to do is we're going to talk about our favorite fictional couples. These are couples that work really well together, are an inspiration. For whatever reason, you choose them. I'm going to just start us off with a very nice staple that I know someone's going to say, and so I'm going to steal it. We've got Zoe and Wash. I mean, one of the best couples on TV that I've ever seen because...
And film. And film, thank you very much.
And film. Because not only do you have an actual successful couple that, up until the film, you know, doesn't
have a horrible... Looking at T's chest now, just waiting to go...
Has the lips started quivering yet?
But they also, they fight. They have their disagreements. Yeah. They have their problems. They're real. They're fully faceted, and nobody's punished for being in a relationship. You know, poor Buffy.
War Stories was one of my favorites because he had to deal with that. I mean, War Stories really, that one was a good one on a lot of levels, and I think it was because you actually had him dealing with that jealousy. I really enjoyed that.
And it shows that jealousy isn't always sexual jealousy. Like, a lot of times it has to do with attention. You know, I don't think that Wash was really jealous of any romantic relationship, but he was more jealous over the attention and the relationship that she and Mal had.
How much time they were spending together, she and Mal were spending together.
And their history.
Yeah.
Oh, history.
It's hard to compete with history, you know?
There goes the first one Angela and I thought of. Awesome. So
that one off the list.
Well done.
Yeah, I knew we were all going to say it, so I just stole it. So who wants to throw out the next couple?
I'd like to throw out the next couple. And I'm going to throw it out there because I think it is not only one of the most tragic of sci-fi couples, but one of the most underrated of couples, because you constantly hear people talk about the pairings up with these people. But I've always felt that Catherine Tate, it will always be an underrated companion, because she was companion that, one, didn't revere the Doctor. She didn't fall in love with the Doctor. She was a drinking buddy. They took this great institution.
They're like brother and sister, really.
Yeah, they were. And the thing was, all she said she wanted to do was she wanted to travel and she wanted to see the world. And she got exactly what she wanted, but then it would kill her. So they had to take it all away. And I think that was even more heartbreaking for the Doctor, because in other cases, it's always been, look, I can't control how you feel about me, and I can't control how you've become attached to me. He knew the situation with Donna. He knew, you know, Tennant knew how Tate's companion was looking at this, that, look, we're just going to go off. We're going to have a few adventures. We're going to drink a few pints, and we're going to have a good time. They were buddies. They were true to life buddies.
I liked how she busted his chops all the time.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's why I enjoy Clara so much, because especially when she keeps calling the TARDIS a snogging box, I just dig that, and it's shades of Donna again. And I was just thinking about it. I was talking about it tonight. I just think that when it comes to couples, I loved the dynamic between the Doctor and Donna, and I find her ending, particularly when he says, I got to take it all away, and she's begging him because she wanted to die with those memories. She's like, this is what I've always wanted. And the Doctor, in his holier-than-thou way, said, I can't live with that. And it shows you kind of how selfish Tennant's Doctor could be. But what a great relationship the two of them had. And I enjoyed that.
Well, it all starts right when she goes off with him in the Adipose episode. Is he says, I just want a mate. And she's like, that's all I want. You know, after the whole, what?
He wanted to mate? What?
Just a mate.
Just a mate.
But she calls him on his stuff all the time. Yeah. And there are times when he's going to go over the edge. And you see that in the episode when she's removed from the timeline, how... You know, the Doctor is dead. Everything bad happens because she wasn't there to call him on his stuff, to help the Doctor.
Nettie, I am totally with you. I think that's one of the most important aspects of Donna's character, is that she called the Doctor on when he was going too far in a way that maybe, say, Martha, with her more, say, schoolgirlish crush almost, wouldn't have, because she cared for him too much in that way and sort of pined for him. And Donna's like, no, no, you can't just... leave these people or destroy that people or
well, and Martha just followed him blindly, which is, you know, helped her with her arc, but really, I mean, Donna is so much more powerful. And then in the end, it's Donna that realizes, okay, this place has been missing, the bees have been missing, that, you know, right from the beginning she was really putting it all together. And then you see later on in the Karen Gillam episodes, the one where the Doctor's dying because River kisses him, And the TARDIS is projecting an image. The one image that is the most painful to him is Donna. Mm-hmm. So she's left the most lasting impression on him.
Yeah.
Which I think is...
Even though she doesn't know it, yeah. And that, it's a, It's a, heartbreaking. It's really heartbreaking. Yeah.
I'm gonna cry now.
All right, I got one.
Take feels.
But can I ask a question right quick before we get to text? Angela had asked this about the debate. So when you said best couples, are we necessarily, I guess not if we're talking about Donna and the Doctor, we're not necessarily talking about romantic couples then.
Couples can expand to the broader topics.
Yes.
I don't want to use an example because I'm pretty sure Pip is probably going to choose the example that would come to mind right away, but involving two men with a very strong partnership. Or at least
I got so many bromances. I love bromances.
So the ones you in had your one. Head,
the Benedict, so, the Benedict Cumberbatch,
Idris Elba, and Benedict Cumberbatch. No. That was my. Oh, that hasn't happened yet?
Covered
that's,
in Vaseline.
Okay, no, sorry.
Covered in Vaseline hasn't happened yet, baby.
Pip, right. Pip, so, hang on. Pip, you can come back for the nutty debate over Slash. I do have a plan for a Slash podcast.
Okay, I'll put that aside. I'll table that. Idris.
A love story in 76 episodes.
76 very long, slow episodes.
About 30 good ones.
I've got so many bromances down here, I can't remember which one I was actually going to point out.
So, if you don't know what I'm talking about, Spock and Kirk. If you don't believe
talking about Slash.
If you don't believe me, watch the episodes again, keeping the thought in the back of your mind that Spock and Kirk are lovers and Bones is jealous. The whole triangle just opens itself up and the episodes become so much more enjoyable. With
damn it, Jim, Bones, I want you to kiss me.
Yeah, damn it, Jim. Just Bones being so grumpy and surly for no reason now makes sense because he's just constantly jealous. And Kirk, who's so flamboyant and out there, being so attracted to Spock's aloofness, and it's so good. It's
does that make Scotty like the drunk friend with benefits? You know, they get drunk. You know, whenever Spock and Kirk have an argument, Kirk goes to Scotty's place. They kick back a few. They get drunk, and then they wind up in bed with.
Censorship is good
because he's the go to. He's the go to.
So about
rebound.
That Slash episode you're gonna do there.
I can say for Tech's nomination, though, if you remove love interest in the romantic sense, they really are a couple. I mean, I have been and always will be your friend. And there is a triangle. I don't want to say love triangle. There's a bro triangle. I don't know. Between the three of them. Certainly. Because, again, it has... You can be jealous over non-sexual things. So it all works if you take out the humor of
and
the Slack.
Kirk keeps cheating on Spock by going out with all the green girls, and it makes him really upset, but he can't show that. And everybody knows that he's being a bad boyfriend, but nobody has the heart to say anything because he's the captain. And it just keeps getting better and better the more you watch and think about this. Yeah, it destroys everything.
All right, Tech, come back to the
come
Slash
to the
podcast. We'll get into Garrick and Bashir later.
Come
but.
Back to the
Yeah, the
all right.
the Kirk Spock McCoy triangle though is extreme. I use it for various teaching things like ethos, pathos, and logos in my comp classes. But yeah, it's one of those weird friendships where you know Kirk and Spock they're gonna hit it off because Kirk, even though he's the action guy, he's also a scientist, and you know he admires Spock's sound advice, but he's also gonna be best buddies with McCoy because he's a passionate guy. Would McCoy and Spock have been buddies if there were a different captain, or were they just sort of forced into this association and then came to admire and respect each other over time through their fighting and quibbling? I don't know. But you see friendships like that, where like one person is really good friends with two or three people in the group, and maybe they wouldn't have a connection otherwise, but they make it work for the sake of the one person they care about.
So he's like the pivot point.
Yes.
Kirk's the pivot. It sounds
right.
Dirty.
I saw a video about that once. It wasn't good.
I'm just going to sit here and just be quiet.
Let's throw it over to the Fowlers.
Male friendship. We get so few examples of male friendship in modern fiction nowadays. Don't make
That's
them
true.
All Slash.
This is true. All right, let's throw it over to the Fowlers. Do we have a Fowler nomination?
Well, since you have taken off the romantic qualifier, I will just let Angela go because I know where she's going.
You know where I'm going, and I'm not going to go immediately Slash, even though this is like a couple that gets slashed all the time. but every iteration of Sherlock Holmes and Dr. Watson.
Yeah.
This is the one I thought Tip was going to bring up.
Sorry.
Angela's like a month away from finishing her dissertation on Arthur Conan Doyle, so she's stuck on this.
On the iteration, do you also include House?
Yes, interesting. Even though I haven't really watched House, but sure, why not?
Well, throw it in there.
It's there.
It's there. But just the fact that these are two men who, right when they see each other, it's almost like they see their other half, and not necessarily in a sexual way, not necessarily, you know, in a romantic way. And surely, and I know that the straightest guy ever, Arthur Conan Doyle, would not have seen them in a sexual way, would have been horrified.
Is that the sound of him turning over in his grave?
I think it is.
I think so. But
he might have
been saying, what's all this then? What?
With his walrus mustache. But just the fact that over the decades, they just grow together and grow to the point where they are sort of finishing each other's personalities off. Like Sherlock Holmes, through his association with Watson, becomes more and more human, more and more caring, which is something that Sherlock, the BBC show, has been doing very well lately. And the fact that when Watson comes to London, then he is just a wreck. Like, he is destroyed by war, just sort of left by this government to gather himself, and he has nothing. And Sherlock Holmes is actually able to recuperate him through not just heroic action, but just, you know, with friendship.
It's interesting when you see Mary, when Watson does actually get married, people dislike Mary a lot because she's like the third pointless wheel in this perfectly fine bicycle.
She's just an accessory, really.
And notice in original canon, then she gets sort of written out.
It's like he went, oh, I don't really need this woman in here. We got everything going on here.
So have to also then include Kirk and Spock as one of the iterations.
Yeah.
Because there's definite parallels between, you know, Sherlock and Spock and Watson and Kirk. And it's canon that Spock is somehow related to Sherlock Holmes.
See, I would almost say that McCoy was more Watson than Kirk in that case.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe Kirk's Mary.
No, that's Scotty. We already discussed it.
I'm thinking here, Star Trek II Wrath of Khan, when Spock is talking about the consequences of a Genesis device, then it's immediately McCoy that's like, you're going to talk about this logically? There's people and little baby kittens and they're all going to die. And how dare you, sir? And it was very Watson to, you know, sort of call him on that.
We didn't even talk about how Spock was in McCoy.
Nor should we. I'm just
again. It's canon. He had his Katra, man.
I'm sorry. Did you say Katra?
Yes, his Katra, his soul.
Okay. I just want to hear it was Katra that you said. I heard something entirely different. I'm like, wait a minute, we're back on the slash again.
That's just because you have a dirty mind, T.
I do. All right, you got one, baby?
I got many. But can I bring in my new favorite, too?
Yeah, sure. Why not?
Almost Human with Kinnix and Dorian. One is played by a New Zealander, Carl Urban. And he's got he's got a synthetic leg. So he's part synthetic and he's got this kind of conflicted emotion about that. And then you've got Dorian, who is this synthetic, got a synthetic soul.
He's got a synthetic soul. And he was a decommissioned model because they were having sanity issues with these robots. So they just replaced them with very, very lifeless drone style androids. But Dorian actually has a synthetic soul.
Yes. So they're both kind of messed up. But I could watch an entire season of those two characters just driving around in a car talking to each other because they have literally
I know what your favorite line is. Yeah, I'm going.
Yeah.
This is right after they just visited a sex bot vendor.
As you do.
And as you do in the future. And And
Dorian's worried about him.
Dorian's worried about him because he goes, I noticed that your heart level was up. And he goes, look, and Irvin goes, I'm fine. And he goes, well, actually, you're not, because I'm noticing a lot of tension in your.
You're backed up.
And you're backed up. And he goes, I'm sorry. And he goes, and then he looks at him and he goes, did you scan my testicles? And then Travis. And he just goes, you scan my balls? And it's going back and forth. And then there's just this awkward pause. And then with all the oeuvre of Judge Dredd behind him,
he says,
Urban goes, never scan my testicles again. And it was just a really, really nice, almost human. If you're not watching the show, you need to be watching the show. This is a lot of people going, oh, it's on Fox. Blah, blah, blah. Well, you know what? Yeah. It's on Fox.
It's
so
worth
support it.
It.
It's a great show. It's really well done. We love it. We love it.
And it's got a great romance.
A question.
Mm-hmm.
Carl Urban.
Yes.
Yes,
isn't
it's
that bones.
Bones.
Aren't we back on Bones again?
We're back on Bones.
We're back on Bones.
That's what Kirk
But this
said.
Time he's probably more. He's Watson. He might be Sherlock.
No. He's Watson because of the leg.
I think. I mean, as writers, it's a good. I mean, books and brawn.
Or is it shoulder?
She's the passionate one, and he's the analytical one.
He's the analytical one.
So you're gonna see it a lot in.
Ron's got brawn. Sorry, books. He's got anger hiding.
Well, he's got anger. He's got
he's
secrets.
He's fucking this case, then, isn't he?
No.
He's a powder keg waiting to go
see,
off.
I don't see the Watson Holmes with books and brawn. I see more with Watson. And, I mean, with books and brawn, I see more of Scully and Mulder.
Oh, who are also my other favorite, romance.
Or the Avengers.
Or Patrick. We see
or is it a bromance?
What?
The greatest X-File of all.
I thought that was I Got Pretty Boys.
Yeah, I got me such beautiful boys. But no, I mean, I always thought of I always saw that dynamic. I mean, yeah, I would say if you were asking what were the biggest influence with books and brawn, it was John Steed and Emma Peel and Mulder and Scully.
Mulder and Scully, yeah,
absolutely.
By the way, we need a ding for just using the character name Emma Peel in this episode.
Oh.
That's for you, Bob and Shane. on the Mixed Nutcase Facebook group, every weekday I throw out a nutty question of the day. I come up with geeky little questions. They're like little mini debates. And I would say 9 times out of 10, even when it doesn't seem appropriate, Bob and Shane will say Emma Peel as their answer.
It can't be wrong, really, can it?
It really can't, because it's Emma Peel. So...
yes, sorry. I've had two, because I've had my Mulder and Scully are my favorite two co-workers who end up as something more, and I don't know if Kennex and Dorian are going to end up as something more, but I'd be okay with that too.
Yes.
Yes, Mulder and Scully, I have to say that everybody here agrees they are a great couple.
Yeah,
they are iconic. I mean,
even
how many
Fox,
seasons?
Seven seasons, 5 good ones.
Yeah.
Even Fox,
no, they were
with other shows on Fox, because they would do these little commercials during the credits advertising for the next show on the air. And I remember it was an episode of The X-Files and then King of the Hill. And Hank comes. Oh, it was King of the Hill first, and then it was gone to the X-Files. And Hank comes on and goes, "Well, next is a show about two people who don't have sex, and I approve of that."
Just wait.
Nice.
So, Heath, do you have your nomination?
Sure. Well, you know, this is going to be a controversial one, because, you know, there's a lot of debate about what the best relationship is on this show. But for me, it's going to be Buffy and Riley, or Biley, as I like to call them. Just kidding. Sorry.
He's not.
You're trolling, there he is.
I am totally trolling. Of course,
oh,
I am.
God.
No.
My goodness.
This was another like blindsight in your fandom. You know, like,
no,
you guys
no.
seem to love Voyager the most. So, okay.
Because it's the
hey,
best.
Did you hate on Voyager?
No, it's not.
Great relationship, Janeway and herself. There you go.
God.
Well, there's an interesting picture. Let's not go there. So,
no, anyway, carry on.
Now, actually, though, you know, as much as I love Buffy,
then it has some good relationships. But no, I think I'm going to skip forward a bit. And a more recent one that I'm really admiring, because I don't like crime procedurals overall, but Castle and Beckett, they have me watching. I think they've really got a solid chemistry, and for what could just be another dime a dozen crime of the week show, just the raw Nathan Fillion charisma and the relationship that they have, and you know the others on the show, I think it really makes that show something special.
Well, I mean, the other thing that makes that show, I think, terrific is that, again, the two of them they do not necessarily put up with each other's
Well, we're a big fan of banter.
We're a big fan of banter.
Professional talking and arguing.
Banter is always good.
Really,
and,
you can imagine that, huh?
Something tells me that's your aphrodisiac.
We just banter. But the thing I like about them is they didn't do the whole moonlighting, are they doing it, are they not doing it.
Yes.
They quickly went on to doing it.
But I'm reminded, though, that's the thing, I'm reminded of how good moonlighting was before the writer's strike, before it screwed everything up, and because it was obvious that after they hooked up the two characters in moonlighting, they didn't know where to go with it. Mm-hmm. Whereas in Castle, they're like, no, we know where we're going to go with this.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's what I think that's what writers of any sort want to do. Okay, if we deal with this, if we actually make this happen, where are we going?
Yes.
I'll go ahead and part the curtain a little bit. They wanted Books and Braun to hook up in the first book.
Mm.
And we were like, no, we're not going to do that. And it kind of went back and forth. And they said, well, something's got to develop in the second book. I'm like, it will. And we wait until the very end of the book. And they finally kiss.
Spoilers.
Yeah, spoilers.
Take the headphones off. I want to read your books eventually, I promise.
So
the relationship status won't mess up the reading of anything.
No, it won't.
Okay.
But in the third one, we see the aftermath of what happened at the end of book two, mm-hmm. which I've got to admit.
Well, let's face it, hooking up with your coworkers can be messy.
Yeah. And Pip and I had so much fun. Because, you know, after that massive kiss that is planted, now they have to deal with it. And, you know, we found some of the best dialogue in the book comes from those scenes when they're dealing with it.
Mm-hmm.
And it happens.
Eliza has some interesting ways of dealing with it.
Especially at the most inopportune times. Yeah. And so, you know, and that was the difference between Moonlighting versus Castle. In Moonlighting, they're like, okay, let's hook him up. And they're like, oh,
okay,
crap.
Now what
do we do?
Well, Castle definitely did a very slow burn. And that's not to say, I mean, there was an attraction between the two very early on. But
oh, yeah.
There was also character growth and Castle's sort of innate childishness and Beckett's devotion to duty above all else. Both of them had to adjust and get to places in their lives where they were right for each other.
Right.
And that is an incredible thing for any writer to do.
Tune in tomorrow. Same bat time, same bat channel.
Nelly Bites is produced by Nimlas Studios. You can find us at nimlas.org/blog. Contact feedback at nuttybites@nimlas.org. Call our voicemail line at 347-NUTTY-42 or 347-688-8942. This work is licensed under a Creative Commons Attribution Non-Commercial No Derivatives 3.0 unported license. Basically, you can share it, you can send it around to your friends, just don't change it, don't sell it, don't try to make any money off of it, and link back to me, my site, and everything.